A warm welcome to all the readers of my R&D Insights. The latest issue is about leadership after the crisis, and I'm here in a call with Chris Johnston. He's a medical doctor, addiction specialist, and an empowerment coach with over 20 years of experience of training people in the skills and strengths of positive change and resilience. He actually been writing a new book, Find Your Power, Toolkit for Resilience and Positive Change, of which you can see a review in the R&D Insights. And I just thought it would be a good idea to have a conversation with Chris about this book and give some highlights to my readers. Welcome, Chris.
So what is your main focus right now, these days or times?
I see my role as an educator. I'm involved in teaching and training. And I also run courses for people who are concerned either about aspects of their own life or things happening in our world, who want to strengthen their capacity to bring about positive change. So in terms of my main job, I see my role very much now is passing on the insights, the tools, the skills that I found most useful in bringing about positive change. And that's both through the training work I do and the teaching work I do, but also through my writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
In this time of change, sometimes people can look at the information and find it so disturbing that there's a sense of, oh my God, it's too depressing to look at. And I'd say the first skill of resilience is, and when I say the word skill, I mean there's a learnable component here. The first skill is the skill of awareness. How do we strengthen our ability just to look at situations that are disturbing? Because we can't deal with a problem until we've recognised it. I like the idea here of a sequence of resilience, and a sequence, I think a bit like there's a number of frames, a bit like a movie film that goes through a number of stages. It's because there's an ideal that we move to. You know, we move to a state where we're resourced and we can look at things calmly. But quite often we don't get to that place straight away. I would say being wobbly, as in feeling kind of upset and disturbed, is part of the journey towards that state. And when I say a sequence of resilience, that's different from a picture. A picture is a more kind of a static image, you know, and sometimes people can have a sense of, I should be calm and feel somehow deficient if we're not. But yeah. I suppose it's just allowing for our emotional journey towards a more resourced state. And quite often there's a period of bumpiness where we come to terms with what's going on.
Well, I was listening to what you just said and about this kind of different levels, how you approach that one when you at the risk of being overwhelmed. The first picture that came to my mind was scenario planning.
Yes, I think this is very important, because what we're doing is when we're dealing with uncertainty, there's all kinds of different ways it could go. And the idea of scenario planning is you're thinking in advance, what if? You know, what if this happened? What if that happened? And we don't know, but part of resilience is preparation. And I think the same thing applies to all kinds of other risks. And it's not getting completely ground down by risks, because I think sometimes risks can be blown up and people can be paralysed when they see, oh my God, what if this happens? What if that happens? But it's there's a technique that's used in the treatment of nightmares. When people have a recurrent nightmare that keeps coming back, what they do is they get people to imagine the nightmare in their daytime waking state, and they say, imagine a good ending. If you can have that nightmare and you say, well, okay, you know, just imagine how it could work out well. And in a way, that's what you're doing with scenario planning. You're saying, well, what's the best possible ending that could happen for some of the nightmares that we might be worried about? How can we plant the seeds of those good endings here and now?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, good.
So my understanding, Bernard, a lot of the work you do is with organisations, what they can do to strengthen their resilience.
Well, that's part of the work. I mean, it's organisations, and a lot is with individuals. People recognise that they've been drained, that they say, well, this I never expected this to happen. They just recognise the people I'm talking with and working with partly, that there's something they need to do more about in order to be prepared. Like you said, then I thought, so what can I do? Can I give them something in the area of resilience? And that's why I was looking for books and literature, and that's how I came across the book that is going to be published in May now.
Yes, that's right, yes. And so I really hear that there's a kind of emotional burden, and in a way that can leave people feeling exhausted when they've gone through periods of real crisis and uncertainty. It can just wear people out. And
yeah.
I find the term emotional bruising very helpful. Yeah. A way of thinking about this where we say this is normal. This is normal. When you go through a bumpy time, don't be surprised if you have a few emotional bruises afterwards. But the important thing about this is that we can pick ourselves back up. And just as when you have a physical bruise, you're kind of, you look after your arm. You don't, you know, overexert yourself. You look after the wound. I think the same is true of emotional bruises, that we need some care and attention as part of restoring our sense of balance. But also, I really like this term of post-traumatic growth, that just as there can be a post-traumatic stress disorder where there's a kind of a wounding and a deficit after a trauma, there can be a way also in which people grow stronger through their experience of the bumpiness. And I'd say that any of your clients who've been shaken up in a way where they get really interested in learning how to better prepare themselves for something like this next time, they are being strengthened by what they've been through. And that particularly the work that they do with you is part of how that strengthening happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a bit like, I think I mentioned it in one of my emails, what you just said, sounds a bit like the hero's journey. So you have to go through a rough time in order to grow actually through the experience, as long as you're able to work with the experience in a way that's not destructive, but it's delivers growth potential.
Absolutely. And I find that such a helpful perspective. It's something I do myself when I'm facing difficulty and challenge. I kind of have a little, my inner voice, I think of my kind of inner coach in a way, you know, that encouraging voice that says, draw inspiration from adventure stories, that, you know, this is my adventure right now. In an adventure, you expect it to be bumpy and turbulent, and that's also what makes it exciting. But it's also saying, well, how can I rise to this challenge in the best possible way? What's going to help me do that? Dealing with depressing situations, which is about strengthening our power to respond. And I write about, and I think you've seen the introduction where I write about the idea of the self-help SSRI. The self-help SSRI is based on developing and cultivating the strategies, strengths, resources and insights that help us get through bumpy times.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have these. One of the things I do when I run resilience courses is I just have little cards and I just put these letters SSRI. And I get people to think about times of difficulty that they've got through. And I just get them to say, okay, what are the strategies you used? And a strategy is something you do. But then the second S is, what are the strengths I drew upon? And I think so important to name the strengths we recognize in ourselves, that I think of it is that back to thing about an adventure story, that in an adventure the character has certain strengths that help them deal with situations, and we tell stories in our minds about ourselves that include the kinds of strengths we see ourselves as happening as well as also the deficits we believe that we have. And by consciously naming and then choosing to develop the strengths, and just as you can develop physical strength by regular exercise, you can also develop inner strengths through practicing, through using them often. So that's the second S. So there's the strategies and the strengths. And then resources are just anything that we turn to. And resources includes people. It includes books or pieces of music or images, But there's also inner resources like enthusiasm and memories. I mean, I think memories are very important resources, that when we remember, say, a time that we got through something difficult, or we remember something that someone said to us that really helped. And then that, so that something that people say, that moves us on to the fourth letter, which is the I for insights. And the insights are the pieces of wisdom that really make a difference. And I'd say that one of the pieces of insights, an insight about resilience I find really helpful, is this idea that resilience is linked to learnable skills. It's not just something that some people have and other people don't. That we mm-hmm. can train ourselves to become more resilient. And the way we do that is by focusing on the strategies we use, the strengths we can develop, the resources that we turn to, and the insights that we find make a difference to us.
Okay. Sounds like a relatively simple kind of mantra, that is a SSRI. When you go into difficult times, think about the SSRI. As you said, I think you mentioned before, you take the card with the SSRI on, and then people can say, okay, so what are my strategies? What are my strengths? What are my resources I can actually turn to? And what insights can I get from that? That sounds
That's exactly it. And the self-help SSRI is just a way of giving a bit of structure to that. And this is just a simple process that people can use. But the beauty of it is it's a framework that people fit their own wisdom. It's customizable, that there's no one solution that's right for everybody, that what might be a brilliant insight for one person may be the wrong thing for someone else.
Good. Okay. Well, I like the idea. I mean, I am using things like inner dialogue with my clients in some cases in personal coaching. Uh-huh. And sometimes they come up with, post-its they put up and just have a reminder. But the thought of a flashcard where you have it in the pocket or somewhere and just draw it out physically and say, okay, this is my reminder that I have the strengths, I may have the strategies already. So I'm in the same situation, I can actually use exactly how I exercised it before in a state of preparation to gain the resilience for the situation I'm facing right now or might be facing.
Well, some of my people I've worked with, they've done that. They've had a card and they've had it laminated and they just had it in their pocket.
Great, yeah, okay. Coming back to your book, because you said you pulled out more resilience, it was there in the previous version. What else can readers expect from the book? Highlights on what you think is for managers, for leaders in industries and business would be a real highlight for them to read?
Yes, well, it's a toolkit, and I'd say the tools are there, but what I've done is that I've reframed it as, and I've brought in more of the context that we face now, because I've brought in more stories, so the tools are still there. This fits into my big interest in positive psychology. Positive psychology is a branch of psychology that looks at human flourishing. How do we draw out the best side of people, not just in terms of positive mood, but also in terms of positive resources? And yeah. Martin Seligman, he talks about who developed this approach, one of the key people developing this approach. He talked about the three pillars of positive psychology as positive mood, positive qualities, and then the third pillar was positive institutions or organizations. And I think this is such an interesting area that we are going through a period of bumpiness. It's like, how can we use crisis as an opportunity to redesign what we're doing, the way that we go about things? It may be that in terms of some measures that we focused on, like particularly material consumption, will have to go down. But there might be other measures like quality of life, quality of relationships, that can go up. If we can be part of a story of planting new life, of restoring fertility, of recovery, the more we inhabit that story, the more we contribute to resilience, not just on a personal level, but also on an organisational and community level.
I'm just thinking how that can actually give leaders I'm working with, so in technical organisations, when they've gone through very, very difficult times, and what you said, they had to lose people, and that they could actually take what you just said and say, okay, what is the my contribution? How can I actually inspire people to regrow again their enthusiasm, their commitment to an organization?
What you're doing there is you're planting a story, and the story is something that includes a turnaround. And I think this idea of the turnaround is, okay, things are really difficult at the moment. We're not denying that. Some people are going to lose their jobs. It's going to be bumpy, and we're not just painting a spray paint of happiness and this will all be fine. And I think this is something very important about the balance of positive and negative thinking.
Yeah, and then come back into what I would call a player mode of thinking and looking for resources rather than being a victim to the situation around us.
Yes, I really like that. I saw that in your email, and I thought, yes, exactly. That's exactly it. That now comes for the next part, which is how do I respond to this? And what will help me respond in the best possible way? And that's where the SSRI framework is really helpful, saying, okay, well, I want to, one insight is that even when things are awful, there are some possibilities of how it could go that are better than others. Mm. And how do I put power of my choices and influence behind the better possible outcomes? So it's like our choices are like votes, and we don't know what will happen, but we're saying, well, what I'd like to happen is this.
Well, Chris, I'm just looking at time, and time is running fast. I thought it was a great conversation with you.
Yes, and one other thing I'd point towards is I produce an audio book, an audio CD called The Happiness Training Plan. It's just an hour of me having a conversation with a positive psychologist colleague, Miriam Akhtar, about how do we train ourselves to improve our mood. Positive psychology strategies for increasing happiness.
Yeah.
Just come out on Amazon.
Yeah.
Great talking to you, Bernard.
Thank you very much for your time. It was great listening to your insights, your experience, and I hope that sometimes our path will cross again, and wish you all the best with the book and also with a new one that's in the making.
Yes, thank you, Bernard, and I hope our paths cross again too. Thank you.
Okay.